You know, summer in Wisconsin means spending time on the lake or the river, maybe warm, sunny days. You boat, you water ski, you fish. Unfortunately, summer also brings some toxic algae blooms and frequent beach closures. Larry Mueller here talking today with Gina La Liberty, who is a coordinator of statewide harmful algal bloom and inland beach monitoring. That's a big title here for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. And as we talk with her, I hope you'll join in. Maybe swimming beaches near you have closed for the summer or part of the summer because of blue-green algal blooms. Do you know how to protect yourself and local lakes from toxic algae? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Gina, thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for the invitation, Larry.
What has it been? A long time, 30 years. Have you been doing that long, studying Wisconsin lakes?
I've been with the Wisconsin DNR since 2000. I actually started out looking at kind of the ancient history of lakes, taking sediment cores and reconstructing nutrient histories based on some types of algae fossils in those sediments. And then I moved on to streams, and then now I'm working on lakes, blue-green algae blooms.
Oh, so you've got a lot of experience here. You know the history. How long have they been around, those blooms?
Well, I would say literally blue-green algal blooms have been around for about 2.5 to 3 billion years. They're why we have the oxygen atmosphere that we have now. In Wisconsin, the earliest bloom record that I have found was in 1895, I believe, in Lake Mendota and Monona. So the lakes here were getting things like sewage pumped into them directly, and that that fed the blooms in those times.
Yeah. So what is the makeup of a bloom like that, a blue green?
Well, blue green algae, their scientific name is cyanobacteria, and that reflects the fact that they're actually true bacteria. They get lumped in with algae because they photosynthesize just like plants and true algae do, but they're really bacteria. And the blue-green part of the name comes from some of the blue pigments that are contained within the cells that we normally don't see if they're actively growing, but we do see kind of a turquoise color sometimes when blooms die and decompose and those cells break open.
Yeah. And your role, talk about a little more about what do you do in your role as DNR statewide harmful algal bloom coordinator?
Well, the coordinator position, it sounds like I arrange blooms to happen, and that's really not the case. That would be a very interesting superpower. But I lead the DNR's communication and response around blooms. So one of the big parts of my job, especially this time of year, is getting bloom reports from the public. We have an email address on our DNR website, dnrhabs@wisconsin.gov, where people can submit reports of blooms occurring in a lake. And one thing that really helps me to verify whether they're seeing a blue-green algal bloom or something different is that they submit photographs. I can tell from a photograph whether it is a blue-green algal bloom or something else. And sometimes it is something else.
Yeah, is that a good thing?
Yeah.
Maybe or probably.
It can be a good thing. Well, I really like the fact that people are going to the lake and looking at conditions and wondering what something is. And that usually gives them pause if it looks like a blue-green algal bloom. But sometimes it's things like pollen. So I got a lot of pollen reports this spring. Pollen's usually a light yellow color. It can accumulate in scums on the surface of lakes and rivers, just like a blue-green algal bloom might. But if you see that yellow pollen coating surfaces on land, that's kind of a cue that that yellow stuff on the water is probably pollen.
And this blue-green algae is really harmful, or can be really harmful.
Yes, some blue-green algae can be harmful. So there are some species that have the ability to produce toxins. Not all of them do, and even those that have that ability to make those toxins don't do them all the time. Don't make them all the time. And where the harmful part of it comes in is with exposure. So people and animals are exposed if they're swallowing blue-green algae in water. So people, if they're accidentally swimming, animals, if they're intentionally drinking from a lake. You can have some aerosol exposure too. For example, if you're water skiing or tubing across a lake, that the boat that's towing you is kicking up a lot of spray and you inhale that spray.
Yeah. I can remember that from my water skiing days, sucking it in, yep. Sucking water in, and hopefully not the blue-green algae. So I'm thinking, actually, what comes to mind right away for me is wildlife, like deer or anything else, beaver, anything that uses the water.
Yeah.
And we have no way of really knowing, I would guess, the potential harm that is done to those animals.
Right. It would be really difficult to try to assess that. I mean, you can put signs up at a beach and people will read them and hopefully protect their pets, but obviously the wildlife aren't going to pay attention to that.
Yeah. And I'm wondering how widespread is that blue-green bloom in Wisconsin? How bad is it this summer, and how bad has it been?
Well, just to take a general step back, so blue-green algae, they live in every water body in Wisconsin. There are actually some that grow on land, too. I've seen mud puddles in my neighborhood that have blue-green algae kind of growing on the sediments. So they're in every aquatic system in at least small levels. Where we typically see blooms happening are in water bodies that have high nutrient levels. So phosphorus and nitrogen, those are nutrients that can fertilize the growth of plants, of algae, or blue-green algae. So if we've got a lot of those nutrients in water, you can potentially have a lot of blue-green algae growing.
Yeah, and I would think that we're going to, you look in maybe urban areas more, or is it rural areas? Are you likely to see it more?
Well, I get bloom reports from really all throughout the state. I get the most bloom reports, and we know that the most blooms are occurring in these nutrient-enriched water bodies. But occasionally I'll get bloom reports from, say, really clear, low-nutrient lakes in northern Wisconsin. And in those cases, it's most often sort of a physical cause for those blooms. If you've got a few days of really calm conditions, blue-green algae, at least the planktonic blue-green algae, can float to the surface. And then wind can then blow them all to the downwind shore. So in those cases, it's more the wind that's really causing that bloom to accumulate at the shore. And that's also because, blue-green algae have really wide growing tolerances. Some have to have those high nutrients. Some don't tolerate the nutrients, and they like lower nutrient systems. So they're really diverse in what their preferences are. So in those cases, you might have a lake with low nutrients, and you just have different species of blue-green algae there.
And they may not be as harmful in a way, or are they just as harmful?
I would say, in general, the major bloom species are the ones that tend to grow in these really nutrient-enriched systems. Less so the species that grow in the lower nutrient systems.
So who decides that a beach needs to be closed because of the algae?
Well, in Wisconsin, that jurisdiction lies with the local health departments. So if I get a bloom or the folks monitoring the beach let me know about a bloom, I work with the public health department, determine that, yes, that is a blue-green algae bloom at the beach. In some cases, like in Madison, Public Health Madison-Dane County actually has a capacity to monitor for algal toxins at our beaches. But that's really not the case with most public health departments throughout the state, and they can close a beach just based on visual observation of a bloom at a beach.
And if you've got your dog swimming in one of those, that can kill the the dog or the person, I guess.
Well, the dog is, it would probably be a situation where you can visually see a bloom. If you just don't know what that is and the dog drinks the water that contains the bloom, that's an exposure route for them. And since animals, because of their smaller body size and their tendency to drink more of the water, or dogs will actually groom the blue-green algae from their fur after they get out of the water, they have a higher exposure, unfortunately. And we have had some very serious illnesses in dogs, and actually, unfortunately, some dog deaths in Wisconsin.
Yeah. Gina LaLiberty, our guest today. Gina LaLiberty is the coordinator of statewide harmful algae bloom and inland beach monitoring for our Wisconsin DNR. Questions for her, maybe an experience to share. I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look at algae blooms on the show today with our guest, Gina LaLiberty, who is coordinator of statewide harmful algae bloom and inland beach monitoring for our Wisconsin DNR. Questions for her, or maybe an experience to share. I hope you'll join in. The number is 800-642-1234, or you can email to talk@wpr.org. I had an email from Jill to say that makes a statement. Pesticides, herbicides, and synthetic fertilizers can harm a lot of things. Pollinators, birds, aquatic life, even people and pets. They also wash into our waterways and contribute, she guesses, to algae blooms and ecosystem damage. And says this is well documented by environmental research. Why aren't they banned?
Why aren't they banned? That's a good question. There has to be a political will to ban them, and they do serve some purposes. I would say that, yeah, fertilizers can contribute to algal blooms. They fertilize their growth. But things like herbicides, too. There's been some research that indicates that blue-green algae are less susceptible to herbicides than other types of algae. So they can, if herbicides are washing in from the land, they can kind of inadvertently give algal blooms a boost.
Yeah. So what do you do if, first, who's at the greatest health risk to something like this?
For algal blooms, it would depend on who you are, what you're doing, and how much of that water you're swallowing. So for things like swimming, if you're immersing your head, little kids are at the greatest risk. They spend more time in the water. They might not be as good at keeping water out of their mouth. They might intentionally drink the water. Same with dogs. Dogs are going to intentionally drink that water, and that's an exposure route. It's less of a risk if you're doing something where you're not sticking your head and your face in the water, because you're at a lower risk of accidentally swallowing that water. So something like kayaking or fishing is going to be a much lower risk.
Yeah. As you were talking, I was thinking about my kids when they were little. I'd see them putting their hands in the water and then sticking their hand in their mouth.
Yep. Yep. Hand to mouth.
Hand to mouth. Well, how susceptible to getting sick are dogs that swim in the water?
Well, that would depend on like how concentrated that bloom is that they're exposed to, and whether that bloom is actually making toxins. It's kind of the complicated thing that you can't tell if a bloom is making toxins just by looking at it. You would have to actually test it. So in general, it's just really good idea if you see an algal bloom in the water, which would normally look like tiny green particles. In some cases, they look like little green grass clippings. There are also some sort of tan pinhead-sized blobs that might be a bloom. But there are also other types of blue-green algae that normally grow on lake bottoms, and they can float up off the bottom. They tend to be sort of a dark color, sometimes a very, very dark green or even a teal color. So floating mats like that might be an exposure route for dogs. Like if they like to to kind of snap at things floating on the water.
Yeah. I was thinking about research or work that's been done in sort of this Madison watershed and the rivers coming in to kind of do things to mitigate agricultural pollution, for example, as it comes in. Have we had much success with that?
I think you have to remember that this is a long process. We've been putting nutrients into at least the Madison Lake since the 1800s. And I look at it like cleaning up after a really raucous party. It takes probably longer to clean it up than it does to mess things up. But things like that Suck the Muck initiative, in which the really nutrient-rich sediments are being dredged out of some of the tributaries to the Madison Lakes, that's a really important effort.
Yeah, I would think so. But also, just right here in any urban setting, I mean, there's plenty of reason to believe that the pollution can be greater even from a city like Madison than maybe even the farms.
I think there's been some research that shows overall, since we have such a big watershed that includes a lot of agriculture, agriculture is the primary input to the Madison Lakes, but I think the things that Madison and Monona residents can do to mitigate those impacts is important. So even things like keep making sure you rake the leaves out of the gutter and keep them from washing down storm drains, because they can be a significant input of phosphorus to lakes in the fall.
Yeah. Do you have somebody else is wondering about experiences that you may have had with particularly bad ones over time?
Sure. Well, blue-green algal blooms, if they are really big, really intense, and they're decomposing, they can be really stinky. And in some cases, people mistake them for, I think there was a bloom on the Fox River that was decomposing. It was a really bright turquoise color, and someone had reported it to DNR and thought it was a spill from a porta potty because it smelled like sewage and it had that bright blue color, but it actually was a blue-green algal bloom in the Fox River that was decomposing.
Oh. And how does it dissipate? I mean, you know, it's there and then it's over time, I suppose it's gone, but what happens?
Well, the populations will naturally die off. A lot of times when you have a bloom forming on the surface, those cells, those colonies are getting a lot more UV light than they're used to maybe further down in the water. So that stresses them out. They're getting a lot warmer than they are further down in the water. So a lot of these things will eventually lead to them dying and just decomposing. And there are a lot of decomposing bacteria, and they're actually viruses too that can break open blue-green algae cells and lead to their death.
Oh, and when they're dead, then they're not a problem?
For the I would say that, yeah, for the most part, they're not a problem. Where they might be an issue is if there were toxins present in that bloom, and those toxins are then released into the water.
Brian in Two Rivers emailed to say they've noticed that when there are wavy conditions, area beaches, Two Rivers area, occasionally have algae or a type of seaweed that seems to hover just below the waterline. It is slimy and green. It is usually just for a few feet at the shore, and then the water clears. And Brian wonders, is it safe to walk through this particular bloom?
Yeah, what Brian's seeing at Two Rivers on Lake Michigan is a green alga called cladophora. It normally grows attached to things on the bottom, and that which used to be rocks, but now it grows on quagga mussels out in Lake Michigan. Which is a non-native mussel that's invaded the Great Lakes system, and it essentially farms cladophora. The cladophora grows on the shells. They recycle nutrients really close to the bottom that the cladophora takes up, and by filtering, they've really cleared up Lake Michigan. So Lake Michigan's a lot clearer than it used to be, so there's more of the bottom where sunlight can reach cladophora. So cladophora's really been taken off in the last 10 to 20 years in Lake Michigan.
Yeah, yeah, and that's not good. Well, in a lot of ways, or is it?
Well, it's completely changed the ecology of Lake Michigan. And then when it comes to our beaches, Cladophora kind of goes through a midsummer sloughing event where a lot of the strands of the algae break off the bottom, and they can get washed in by waves and especially by storms. So when all of this deposits on a beach, there's sometimes mussels that wash up, and seagulls will poke around in there and forage on the mussels and poop, and the Cladophora mats washed up on the beach kind of incubate those fecal bacteria. So you've got this kind of nasty little system where you can have higher bacteria counts right around these Cladophora mats.
Barbie mailed, how does the presence of algal blooms in our lakes compare with algal blooms in other cities? She recently saw an article about New York beaches being closed for algal blooms.
Yeah, I would say that we're kind of on par. We do have some issues with some of our large impoundments. I think Wisconsin tends to have more sort of impoundment type lakes than at least for, compared to Michigan. So anytime you put a dam on a river, it slows down the flow. You can have nutrients and sediments depositing, and that can tend to lead to more algal blooms in those systems.
How does, I'm wondering about salt. I mean, I'm thinking about ways that we can reduce algal blooms. And does salt play a role in blooms?
Well, just like the...
I'm still thinking road salt for it. Yeah, know, street salt.
Just like the herbicides we talked about. So road salt can wash into lakes, and just like the herbicides, blue-green algae are less susceptible to chloride and road salt than other more desirable types of algae. So that's another thing that inadvertently can be giving them a boost in our lakes.
Mm-hmm. And one of the other things, what are some other things that we might do just as homeowners that that could help mitigate this problem?
Well, I think if you don't live on a lake, but you live, obviously we all live within a watershed of a lake or a river, just anything that you can do to keep those nutrients on the land where you are. So you can do something like installing a rain garden, for example. Especially around Madison, there's promotions for keeping the lakes leaf-free, so making sure that you keep fallen leaves out of the gutters, so that's not contributing nutrients to the lakes in the fall. But for folks who actually live on lakeshore properties, making sure you're reducing as runoff from your property as much as possible. So there are a lot of things that you can do, including planting native plants along the shoreline, for example.
Yeah, that really helps. Julie emailed here with something about a mechanical thing. She has a camper in Chautauqua, and the place across the street had horrible algae. It almost caused vomiting. Julie said the new property owners had some kind of machine that cleaned it up, and wonders what the heck kind of machine was that.
That's a good question, and I can't answer that. It's not even sure if it's something technically permitted for use in Wisconsin.
Well, it would be something that would roil the water, perhaps.
That can be a problem. I know there are some devices that are designed to do that, but you have to be absolutely sure you're not stirring up the sediments too, because you're passing the problem along down the shore to the neighbors, and B, if you're roiling up the sediment, that's just adding nutrients into the lake. Yeah. So that's a problem.
So I want to go back before we close here to the web. There's a website that people can go to check on conditions. Let's say you're going to go somewhere in north of Wisconsin, or maybe you're in the north and want to come south and want to know what the condition is. How do they get that information?
That would be the Wisconsin Beach Health website. We actually have a map that has beach conditions, advisories, closures, et cetera, on it. And I can't remember the email address right off the top of my head. But if you search for Wisconsin Beach Health Map, that will have that. That is mostly based on bacteria monitoring at beaches.
Okay. Well, Gina, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today. The time flew by. Appreciate it very much.
Okay. Thank you, Larry.
Gina LaLiberty is the coordinator of statewide harmful algae bloom and inland beach monitoring for our DNR. It's great to have her with us. And great to have you listening in as well. And big thanks to our whole team, Clara Neipert, Joel Patnod, Lee Rayburn, and Jeff Robbins, our executive producer, of course, Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. Thank you so much for listening, and please stay with us. Lots more in shore here on WPR News.